Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks, everyone, for being here. We will call the meeting of the Las Vegas Stadium Authority Board December 5th to order. Turn it over to Ms. Bateman to take a roll.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the board. All members of the board are present either in person or virtually, other than members Baez and McKinney James. You do have a quorum and the meeting may proceed.
Thank you. We will open up our first public comment period. Public comment is in this section is for items on the board's agenda. I ask that you identify yourself and keep your comments to 3 minutes, please. Mr. Koo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, Jeremy Koo, J-E-R-E-M-Y-K-O-O. My comment today concerns item number 9, the development agreement that's up for action today. In a letter I sent to the authority yesterday, I identified 3 areas that I think would be helpful for clarification that I hope either the folks who have been working on this agreement might have more familiarity than a random passerby like myself might have. My 3 concerns are concerned section 4.1I of the development agreement, the second one is where the contingency amount appears in the project cash budget, and the third is whether or how the development agreement contemplates what would occur if for some reason the equity contribution were not to take place prior to the bonding of the stadium bonds. First, with respect to section 4.1, so that section 4.1 sub I of the agreement has the stadium authority represent and warrant that it has reviewed and approved all documents necessary to make all approvals and filings required by both SB1's section 22 sub 1 and section 34 sub 1. And while section 22 makes sense, that's kind of what the findings that are kind of being made here today, it seems that section 34, making representations and warrants about section 34 seems premature or even impossible. For instance, the authority can't have received documents necessary to find that the stadium entertainment and infrastructure district has been found under section 34.1c because the SEID does not exist yet. Certainly the county has not completed its five-month high-impact project process for the on-site infrastructure development agreement, which is required under SB1 section 34.1g. So I guess my questions ultimately that I hope that will be addressed in the proceedings today is what the purpose of including section 34 in that warranty, and why does it seem to represent and warrant current impossibilities, and what consequences would, if this were to stand and be approved, what consequences to the authority if Stadco were to seek to enforce that warranty, should this board in future find it could not make the findings under section 34 of SB1. I'll jump ahead from, I just wanted to ask on second whether the 10% cost contingency is contained within the soft cost budget. It seemed like it was, but it wasn't entirely certain on that. And finally, I would hope that the meeting today will address whether the development agreement addresses the contingency of what happens if Mr. Fisher and his family are unable to make the equity contribution. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Daly.
Mr. Chairman, Chris Daly, Schools Over Stadiums. On Monday, News 4 in Reno ran a powerful story on the school lunch debt growing in Washoe County. It's now $45,000. They also report fewer students accessing school lunches, indicating Nevada kids may be going hungry today. You may remember that one day after signing SB1 into law, gifting John Fisher up to $380 billion, $1 million in public funds, Joe Lombardo vetoed AB 319 to provide free meals to all Nevada students. Nevada should put the needs of students ahead of a California billionaire. For Schools Over Stadiums, this is a question of priorities. Over much of the past year, we've engaged this authority in litigation challenging the constitutionality of SB 1. The suit was dismissed in September due to ripeness and standing. However, the court made no determination on the merits of the claims. The ripeness issue will be resolved if this board moves this project forward today, and we have been in discussions about the appropriate parties to bring similar litigation at that time. I mention this because the development agreement you are considering includes language stating, quote, there's no action, suit, proceeding, claim, arbitration, or investigation pending or to the authority's knowledge threatened by any person against the authority, et cetera, et cetera. I'm here to advise you that litigation against the authority is very much a threat and would advise you disapproving this language. Back in August, Schools Over Stadiums requested all documents, notes, emails, letters, or other correspondence related to construction design, cost, and financing of the stadium. After a four-month delay, on the eve of this meeting, we received one document, five letters, and just over 50 emails that included text. This, despite the stated reason for delay, being our request generated 20,000 potential emails to be reviewed. Simply put, you stonewalled us. So instead of any actual substance, the public is left with just an IOU from John Fisher stating the Fisher family is good for it, as John Fisher alone likely does not have the ability to finance $1.1 billion. It would be helpful to know what you have in written commitments from Doris, Robert, and William, because nothing has been provided to the public. Item number five on today's agenda is the finding that the developer partner has provided adequate financial security for the development and construction of the project. There is no way in good conscience to make that finding based on that letter and the other materials in your packet. Please vote down item number five on your agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. Sal Johnson, Edison Opportunity Fund. Good afternoon, Chairman Hill, Vice Chairman Epstein, Secretary Blackhurst, and the members of the board. My name is Sal Johnson, and I serve as fund manager for Edison Opportunity Fund, a Nevada-based qualified opportunity fund with a proud history of leadership in opportunity zone development. We are here today because of a monumental project that has the potential to transform not only the Las Vegas Strip, but also the future of opportunity zones nationwide. The Edison Opportunity Fund is submitting a letter of support for the approval of the development, non-relocation, and lease agreement for the Athletics Ballpark. I respectfully ask that it be entered into the official minutes of this meeting. The Athletics leadership, John Fisher, Dave Cavill, Sandy Dean, Catherine Aker, have been facing undue criticism, in my opinion, that I believe is neither reflective of their character nor the diligent work they've undertaken to bring this project to fruition. Since their arrival in Las Vegas, they have consistently shown integrity, vision, and a deep commitment to our community. We firmly believe this project will not only result in an iconic venue designed by world-renowned architect Bjork Ingels, but will also ignite unparalleled economic growth in this area. It is our belief that the Las Vegas Athletics will thrive, winning three consecutive World Series upon playing in Las Vegas and putting them second only to my beloved New York Yankees as the most titles in World Series history. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. And thank you for your leadership as a board, especially you, Mr. Hill. God bless you, sir. And for this transformative project that is coming into our valley. God bless you guys. Have a merry, merry Christmas and a happy new year. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, board members, chair. My name is Judith Kohl, K-O-H-L. I am in-house counsel for the Archdiocese of Las Vegas that serves 830,000 Catholics in the Southern Nevada area. It also owns and operates the Shrine of the Most Holy Redeemer, which is located right here on the corner of Giles and Reno Avenue. The Archdiocese of Las Vegas always strives to be a good neighbor, but that aspiration is somewhat difficult when the plans for the development seem to cut off the access to the shrine. If our worshipers, which are about 3,000 to 4,000 each weekend, on any given weekend, can't get to the shrine, it will essentially have to shutter its doors. Indeed, the plans as proposed included traffic the traffic studies and the traffic redirection. They include reconfiguration potentially of the streets of the Reno and Giles streets. We'll have to be marshaling trucks. There will be massing of buildings, and all of this will have a material adverse effect on the Shrine. The Shrine has been a fixture of the South Strip corridor for more than 30 years, and it has served hundreds of thousands of faithful. It has weekend masses, daily confessions, daily masses, and significant large-scale masses on Christmas Eve, Easter, and Holy Days. We anticipate that the stadium will be in use most weekends, hosting 75 to 80 home games, and by design, hosting concerts and events. This will create significant traffic congestion, which cannot be remedied with the hope that stadium goers will ride share, arrive by public or private bus, or walk, especially where there doesn't seem to be sufficient infrastructure to support this as a viable alternative. We are also concerned that the changes that took place on Polaris Road in the development of the Allegiant Stadium, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, will happen to either Reno or Giles. Those streets will probably have to be widened and reconfigured. And in the case of the Polaris Street, it was converted to a one-way street dedicated to the Allegiant Stadium before and after events. This would cause a significant hardship to the Shrine. The Archdiocese just wanted to make you aware of these issues and welcomes meaningful dialogue and fruitful discussion to address these anticipated issues, to continue the successful operation of the Shrine and the future operation of the stadium. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Seeing none, we will move on to comments by myself and the board. I'm going to reserve my comments really for
Mr. Chair. Yes. I'm sorry, if we
You want to approve the agenda?
That would be wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, fine. Okay, if you insist. If the board's had the opportunity to review the agenda in the minutes, if you don't have any changes, I'd entertain a motion to approve both.
Formula.
Motion and a second. Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
Tommy White, yes.
Thank you. That passes. I'm going to reserve my comments for a couple of different times throughout the meeting, one before we start talking about the non-relocation agreement and the lease and development agreement, and then toward the end. But I will open it up if the board has any comments they would like to make now. Okay. Hearing none, we will move on to agenda item one. Mr. Finger.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. The original SB 1 provides that the authority board may consider and approve or disapprove an annual capital improvement budget submitted by the Football Stadium Events Company, also known as STADCO. Our lease with STADCO requires STADCO to submit a capital budget No later than 60 days before the start of each calendar year, and they've done so. The lease also requires a rolling five-year forecast for projected capital, and this list is informational only. Grand Canyon Development Partners has reviewed the STADCO capital budget at our request. In course of doing so, they've spoken with STADCO, they've spoken with proposed vendors, and opined that they found the request consistent with continuing to provide for a state-of-the-art premier and first-class NFL facility. This list represents what we believe is a normal request from an operator who has learned what works and what needs to be adjusted in the stadium. This list is comprised of normal upgrades, improvements in technology, and new operational techniques. Mr. Michael Krohm, the Las Vegas Raiders CFO, is either here behind me or he's on video, I believe, on behalf of STADCO. Oh, it's Mr. Hi, Chris. Okay, I should have turned around. As Chris gets ready to present here, I'll point out that the items in the capital repair column, and I'm going to put this up on the board so you can look at it as Chris goes, the items in the capital repair column are eligible for reimbursement in the future upon completion from the Stadium Authority Capital Fund, and the items in the capital improvement category are similarly eligible for reimbursement from the STADCO Capital Fund.
Good afternoon, Board. Appreciate you guys having me here. My name is Chris Sotiropoulos, for the record, our Vice President of Stadium Operations. Glad that we get to come here once a year to kind of talk about just some of the projects that we feel are going to enhance the stadium and things that we feel are necessary. Obviously, you guys have access to kind of see what the projects are. I'm not going to go into each of them. I will reserve that if there's any questions about any specific projects. But I will say, really, it falls into about three different categories that we look at, just in terms of what we think is really a need for the building. And it's really replacement of obsolete technology and equipment, things that, hard to believe, we're not going into our fifth year of operation. So, you know, as we see trends and things in the industry, we always try to keep up with what the most up-to-date technological advances are. Also, we look at ways that we can enhance the game day experience for our guests or fans. You know, 5 years is still new, but we also want to be looking ahead to the future and kind of making sure that when guests come to Allegiant Stadium, we're providing that high level of experience. And really, the third one is replacement of flooring and other materials that after 5 years have gotten kind of a lot of wear and tear. So those are, I would say, the three categories of everything you'll kind of see of what we've submitted. And in terms of our five-year projection, I would say very similar look ahead in terms of those projects, in terms of knowing what events are coming in the future and how we look ahead to make sure that we're getting ahead of projects that are going to help make sure those events take place and do a great job. So with that, I'll open it up to any questions, unless, Ed, you feel like there's any specific projects you'd like me to go over into specific detail.
I'll defer to the board. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Any questions from the board? Okay. Then I would entertain a motion to approve the proposed 2025 capital budget for Allegiant Stadium.
Jones Blackhurst, move to approve.
Tommy White, second.
Your motion to second. All in, well, cast your votes, please.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
Great. That passes. Thanks, Chris. Perfect. Thanks, Michael.
I know that was the reason everyone was here today. So.
Yeah. Agenda item two.
Mr. Chair, agenda item two asks the board to ratify the selection of KPMG LLP as the independent auditor of the Las Vegas Stadium Events Company, the Raider Stadco. SB1 requires an annual audit of Stadco. The auditor must be an independent certified accountant in Nevada, can't provide similar services to the team or any affiliate. SB1 and the lease require that the audit tour be selected by mutual agreement between Stadco and the Stadium Authority. Mr. Chair, staff represents the KPMG as a qualified auditor, meets the criteria in the law and the lease to perform the audit, and recommends approval.
Thank you, Mr. Crum. Have anything to add to that?
Nothing more to add than that. Yes, I think Ed covered everything. Just here for questions, if there are any. Okay.
Well, thanks for being here. Any questions from the board? If not, I'd entertain a motion.
Jones Blackhurst, move to approve.
Tommy White, second.
Your motion is second. Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
That passes. Thank you. Agenda item three.
Mr. Chair, agenda item three is an informational report on the room taxes that support the football stadium project. And let's start with a look at fiscal year 2024. The fiscal year of the authority is July 1 to June 30 of each year. These little green boxes that pop up will help you follow my numbers. Room taxes in fiscal year 2024 were about $66.5 million, which is about $5.7 million more than the year before. 9.3% is the delta. And not on the slide, that's about $7.3 million or 12% above budget. Obviously, we're deeper into the year than this, but this is the number of reports I have from the county at this point and through the month of August. There's a couple of month lag between operators turning in the taxes to the jurisdictions and them making it to us is the story behind that. But through August, a fine year-to-date start being $739,000 up year over year, 8.3% up year over year, and that's actually a double digit year over budget number through that point in time. Available for any questions, Mr. Chair. No action is required on this item.
Any questions for Mr. Finger? Okay, agenda item four.
All right. Agenda item four, we'll start the series of baseball findings, steps, and approvals of documents that we've been building to in these number of months. And Mr. Chair, we've discussed the four actions required for the board to approve the remaining stadium documents, and those four actions are not the four remaining actions, but the four total actions. This board had to have found that Major League Baseball authorized the relocation of the team, that the team committed to relocate, that the board selected a baseball stadium events company. And the first two things, those relocation actions, took place in May. The third thing, the Stadco selection, took place in July and left us with the fourth thing. And the fourth thing is the selection of a developer partner who meets the criteria of Section 2 of Senate Bill 1. In turn, there are four findings the board must make related to the developer partner. And the first two are generally about who that entity is, and certain legal criteria of their formation, and we also made those two findings in July. The third and fourth findings necessarily took longer because they required further development in the construction relationship and the financing development from the team, and we bring those to you today. The third finding and the subject of this agenda item is that the developer partner has demonstrated to the satisfaction of the board that they're able to successfully develop and construct the Major League Baseball Stadium project. To provide support for this finding, the backup to agenda item three contains the draft development agreement that will ask the board to approve in agenda item nine, which details the framework of financing and development for the stadium. Also attached to this are Stadco's agreement with Mortensen McCarthy joint venture to build the stadium and Stadco's accounting of the compilation of their project team and their development efforts to date. Mr. Dean will make a presentation to help the board further understand the support for this finding.
Come on up, Mr. Dean. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Pleased to be here. Thanks for the chance to speak. I want to just start by expressing gratitude, our gratitude, and thanks for all the effort by so many parties that allows us to be here today. Thanks to the Authority Board and the staff. With this being our eighth meeting and almost 250 pages of documents plus exhibits, we know thousands of hours have been diligently expended to produce documents that will protect the public for the investment that's being made. I also want to express thanks for the Clark County Commissioners and the Clark County staff who've been substantively engaged with us along the way, and our partners, Bally's and GLPI, who are dedicating 9 acres of prime Las Vegas Strip real estate in support of the project. And also just to thank Governor Lombardo and Speaker Yeager and Senate Majority Leader Cannizzaro and the Nevada Legislature for believing that baseball could come to Nevada and Las Vegas and working to pass a bill that would support the ballpark and also protect the public investment. With that, as for the first finding to be made today, we've shared a design build contract from Mortensen McCarthy. And we have to say it was a big plus for us to be able to form a partnership with them, given the success of Allegiant Stadium. We've also shared that we've expended about $40 million to date on our Las Vegas ballpark effort. And we've assembled a team of more than 30 distinct firms that are working with us to design, document, redesign, improve, and ultimately build this ballpark on the Las Vegas Strip. I would think it's noteworthy that beyond Mortensen McCarthy, a number of the firms that we've shared were also involved with Allegiant. And so we think we have a very strong team here. I've found myself saying in the last many months that it feels like we have an army working on the project. And when we list all the firms that have been engaged, I think it's easy to see why that seems so. We have here today three folks. One was trying to find parking. Lance Nichols from HNTB, Tyler Van Eckout from Mortensen McCarthy, and Todd Bishop, who is always on time but may be coming soon. These are a few representatives of the many, many professionals that are working on this kind of round the clock We've had a year of meetings working on the design and redesign and iteration and adding features to the ballpark and so on. In the second finding, I thought we would address the increase in budget and some of the features that are behind that and so on. But happy to answer any questions about our investment or the progress we've made or the team we've assembled, if there are any.
Thank you, Sandy. Any questions for Mr. Dean? Okay, I would entertain a motion to approve agenda item four, which is the baseball stadium developer partner has in accordance with Senate Bill 1 demonstrated to the satisfaction of the board that the developer partner is able to successfully develop and construct the Major League Baseball stadium project.
Move to approve exactly what Steve just said.
Have a motion and a second. Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
Great, thank you. Agenda item five.
Mr. Chair, agenda item five asks the board to find that the proposed baseball stadium developer partner, Athletic Stadco LLC, has, in accordance with Section 22C4 of Senate Bill 1 of the 35th Special Session of the Nevada Legislature, provided to the board adequate financial security for the performance of the financial obligations of a developer partner for the development and construction of the Major League Baseball Stadium project. In support of this finding, the backup for this agenda item contains documents from the parties detailing how the non-public portion of the baseball stadium cost will be provided in the current total estimated budget. In a moment, Mr. Dean will make a presentation explaining these documents and the framework for the financing. Before he does, I will remind you that this finding is a finding of financial capability. The law and the development agreement require that before any public money is spent on construction, capability has to convert to execution, and the developer partner must have committed financing in the form of any of the following: either an irrevocable deposit of cash that cannot be used for any purpose other than the payment of project cost, or closed construction debt financing, or irrevocable letters of credit or commitments to pay construction costs provided by a bank with at least $1 billion in assets. Mr. Dean?
As Mr. Dean is coming to the mic, I will reiterate something and add something. The point that Mr. Finger made is the next step prior to the county issuing bonds, and we've talked about this, and I think everybody knows it, is that the A's are going to be required to irrevocably post cash, a letter of credit, or construction financing in the hands of a third party that cannot be withdrawn. The other thing I'll say, and I think I'm probably beating Mr. Dean to the punch here, is it's very clear in the law that there is a cap on the amount of public investment that can be made of $380 million in this project, and that any overages in the cost of the stadium are the responsibility of the A's, which they are taking. The way that process works, because this may not be the last time, we hope for you that it is, but may not be the last time that the costs rise. And if they do along the way, before any additional public money, and I don't mean additional in terms of over the 380, because that is not possible, I'm saying that as we, as the public, pays its proportionate share, that process stops if there is an overage in the estimated final cost of the project until the A's irrevocably deposit additional cash or additional financing to pay for those overages. So it's important to understand where we are in this process right now. And Mr. Finger explained that. As we talked about in the last meeting, Mr. Finger and I have both had the opportunity to review some detail of the Fishers family finances. And it is clear that the Fishers have the ability to move forward with this project. I know Treasurer Conine has had that same opportunity and has taken advantage of that. And more importantly, we have a financial professional that is backing this and their statement that that is the case. There is no question that that is the case. Staff has briefed the board to that effect. And with that, Mr. Dean, I will turn this over to you. Maybe I stole all your thunder. Sorry.
No, actually, I appreciate that. I'll just add on to what you said. Hey, we fully embraced the protections that were built into the development agreement. It does take, you know, a little bit of wherewithal to make it through the agreement for people who are interested, but it has a belt and suspenders approach to want to make sure that the public is protected, and we embrace that and still do. I would like to do this in two parts. I'm going to just make a few comments about the financing consistent kind of with what we did on October 31st, and then I'm going to ask Steve Vogel from U.S. Bank to come and speak for a few minutes, and then when he's done, I'll talk a little more about the increase in the budget and so on, if that's okay with folks. Consistent with the discussion we had with the board on October 31st, we've presented four letters to address the financing. The first one was a construction term loan commitment letter from U.S. Bank and Goldman Sachs, two institutions that we've worked with for some time. That construction loan term commitment is subject to customary conditions. We've also provided a second letter, which is an equity investment letter from the John Fisher and members of his family, describing their commitment of $1.1 billion, and subject to the same customary conditions. We have a third letter from Athletics Stadco LLC that lays out principally the conditions that come with both the construction term loan and the equity commitment. And I would just note that many of those conditions relate to kind of the completion of definitive documentation for financing that will really start being utilized in earnest in the second quarter sometime. And then the fourth letter is from U.S. Bank, indicating their review of some of the financial holdings of the Fisher family. And with that, I think I'd like to have Steve come up and just say a few words about that, and then I'll come back.
Please, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. Good afternoon. And thank you for the opportunity to address the board on behalf of the Athletics. My name is
Steve. If I could just ask you to identify yourself, even though Sandy did.
Absolutely. Steve Vogel from U.S. Bank.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I'm a Senior Vice President and Managing Director at U.S. Bank, and I lead the firm's professional sports banking practice. I've been with U.S. Bank since 2012, and I've been a sports industry banker exclusively since 2005. U.S. Bank has worked with the A's senior management team as their lead bank since 2020, and we've been providing capital raising and corporate banking services to the U.S. sports industry for over 20 years. We work with many sports franchises across the five major U.S. professional sports leagues, and we've arranged debt capital for many of the largest sports venue construction projects in the U.S. over the past decade. For those unfamiliar with U.S. Bank, it is the fifth largest commercial bank in the United States, with over $680 billion of total assets as of September 30th, 2024. We've been in business for over 160 years. We have a large presence in the Nevada community, which has contributed to our desire to support this transformative project. Currently, we have about 800 employees and 49 branches in the state of Nevada, including 29 within Clark County. With respect to the construction financing arranged on behalf of the A's and their ownership, U.S. Bank and one other financial services firm, Goldman Sachs, have committed to provide the A's with a $300 million construction loan. The conditions precedent to closing and funding the stadium construction loan are customary for the banking industry and are outlined in detail in the A's letter to the authority on this topic. In conjunction with our due diligence for the stadium construction loan, U.S. Bank reviewed a portion of the financial holdings of the Fisher family and related entities as of June 30th, 2024. Our review included brokerage statements, SEC filings, independent third-party appraisals, and for certain related entities, GAAP-audited financial statements. Based on this review, we concluded that the Fisher family and their related entities have financial assets more than sufficient to fund the equity portion of the proposed capital structure for the new stadium. We look forward to working with members of the Stadium Authority, Major League Baseball, and the Athletics leadership team to complete the various steps necessary to see the company begin the construction process on the stadium in the coming months. Thank you for your time. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Vogel? Thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Steve and your team, thanks for being here, and thanks for that. As it came out on Sunday night, the cost of the project is expected to be higher. This is something we've expected for a little while. We've known for a little while that it could be materially above the initial budget of $1.5 billion. And we wanted to go through one more round of estimating and refinement before putting out another number publicly. So now that's out $1.75 billion. And it's worth stating that the cost increases here are a function of both general pressure on the cost of construction that's being experienced around the country, along with us adding a number of enhancements and features to the ballpark. The increases in the cost of construction, those aren't the most satisfying, but the fun part of the conversation is what's been added. And for that, 70,000 square feet of additional programming inside the building. And that's just a whole bunch of things. It's fan amenity spaces, including additional club spaces and additional suites, and some unique general admission experiences to provide, we hope, an exceptional experience across all the price points for the ballpark. The lower bowl has been turned into a split lower bowl, which is a way of bringing more seats closer to the field, but takes some additional square footage. We've added operational spaces, particularly including additions to player amenities that are intended to be amongst the best in the league. And we've also added spaces for public and private events beyond just baseball games. Las Vegas has a robust market for private event spaces, public event spaces. We would like to serve that if we can. We intend to utilize under-seat cooling, which will be a first in an MLB ballpark for maximum fan comfort. That in addition to the design that maximizes natural light, but also protects fans from the direct sun with the north-facing orientation. We've added audio-visual investment. That's mostly video boards and ribbon boards. Acoustic improvements in support of this being a premier concert venue. And we'll have more detail to share on the design in 2025. I think we'll come back and have a presentation about that and so on. But maybe just to close with two fun tidbits about the design, which is, it's going to be an intimate ballpark, and that means it's just the seats are going to be close. And two ways we can share that is we believe the seats will be the closest to home plate of any ballpark in the country, measured from kind of the backstop to home plate. And the ballpark will have the second least amount of foul territory of any ballpark in the country. So the seats are going to feel close. Consistent with SB1, all the cost increases are the responsibility of the A's. That's been well understood from the beginning. We have a lot of work to do, and also we appreciate being here today with all the work that has been done, and look forward to continuing to move forward. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Dean. Any questions for Sandy? Okay. Thank you, Sandy. Entertain a motion to approve agenda item 5, which is that the A's have provided the board adequate financial security for the performance of the financial obligations of a developer partner for the development and construction of a Major League Baseball stadium project.
Jan Jones-Buckhurst, I would make that motion to approve.
Tommy White, second.
Motion and second. Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
And that motion passes. Agenda item 6.
Mr. Chair, the board has now made all required findings to select Athletics Stadco LLC as the development partner for the Major League Baseball Stadium project. Agenda item 6 is an action item, and staff recommends approval.
Unless there are any questions, I'd entertain a motion to approve the A's as the development partner, Athletic Stadco LLC, as the development partner for the Major League Baseball Stadium project.
Jones-Buckhurst, motion moved to approve.
Tommy White, second.
Motion and a second. Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
And that passes. Before we move on to agenda item seven, just want to say a couple of things in advance of talking about the non-relocation agreement and the lease and the development agreement and the deed. First, I want to just remind everyone that we have been very transparent throughout this process. These documents have been made available to the public for months, made available to the board for months. We have talked about the lease, I think, five times at meetings here. So we wanted to make sure that everyone had an opportunity to provide input, and we appreciate the input that we've received. We've certainly taken that into account and included that in the conversations that we have had about these documents. I want to point out that the development agreement between the A's and the Stadium Authority is different, separate, and apart from the development agreement that the A's will enter into with the county. The issues around infrastructure and access and how this construction project will move forward, including through county staff and the building department, is between the A's and the county. The development agreement here, and Mr. Fingal will talk about the topics in this development agreement, as we have at a number of meetings, are different than the development agreement with the county. And so I want to point that out. That is a process that still is in process and will need to take place prior to construction beginning. The other set of things I want to point out is around the deed. The deed is attached to the development agreement. It is one of the first documents that will actually be in play, to use a bad pun in this environment. We will receive that land. GLPI will dedicate that land for this purpose. But in that deed, we also deal with the end-of-life issues that we have talked about since the first meeting of this board. And that means that in that agreement, we have really four different parties that have had to come together and agree on the content. So I want to thank the A's and GLPI and Bally's, as well as staff here at Stadium Authority, for making that happen. It's a little more complex in the deed than it is in the other three documents. This is important as you read it. Without this context, it's relatively easy to read it wrong and jump to the wrong conclusion. There in the deed, there are definitions of how the relationship between GLPI and the Stadium Authority and Bally's and the Stadium Authority are defined. There is a framework in there within which we have agreed with Bally's and GLPI in within which we can operate without going back to them to have further conversation. That deed can be changed in the future, just like any of the other documents can, through negotiation. What a fair amount of the content in that deed defines is the limits of what the Stadium Authority can do in the oversight of the A's without needing to go back to GLPI and Bally's. And I'll give you a case in point just to illustrate this. We've talked about the number of games that the A's can play outside of the stadium. We have agreed that that will be, in the first 30 years, no more than 7 every 2 years and no more than 4 in any one. That same topic is addressed in the deed, and there's a much broader accommodation in that deed. Doesn't mean that that authority or that approval has been given to the A's by the Stadium Authority. The Stadium Authority maintains that responsibility into the future. What that information in the deed represents is the limit of what we could give the authority to the A's to do without going back to GLPI and Bally's for further approval from them. So there are a number of cases similar to that in that deed. And I want to make sure, as everyone involved reads that deed, that they understand that that's the case. So with that, Mr. Finger, I will turn it over to you for agenda item 7.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The non-relocation agreement is one of the four key agreements that must be completed before financial participation in the stadium can occur. The non-relocation agreement has been in the public domain for over 6 months. It's the fourth public presentation of this agreement. It's brought to you today for approval. The primary public purpose of the non-relocation agreement is a covenant to keep the team in Las Vegas for 30 years to play the games in the stadium, and a payoff of the remaining public investment if that doesn't happen. Key elements of the non-relocation agreement are, as I said, that the term is for 30 baseball seasons. In Article 2, covenants are made to maintain a Major League Baseball team and to commit to playing in Las Vegas for 30 years at the stadium. As discussed, and as Steve just described, as discussed in previous meetings, the section allows the team to play 7 games every 2 seasons in neutral site venues and no more than 4 in any single season. Article 2 describes allowed conditions of untenantability, periods where the team is not in default for playing in the stadium. Generally, these situations involve damage or destruction of the stadium, force majeure events, condemnations, emergencies, etc. This also includes scenarios of material additional work, renovation of such a scale that it can't be accomplished in a regular off-season. Such material work is subject to board approval. When the stadium is unsuitable for play, the team must make commercially reasonable, diligent, and good faith efforts to play at an alternate site in unincorporated Clark County. Article 3 further provides that the team can't relocate in those 30 years already described and can't substantively negotiate or enter into agreements to play elsewhere until the last 7 years of the agreement. Article 4 provides remedies for relocation defaults. Generally, the authority must seek specific injunctive relief for a breach. If that relief is not granted, the authority is entitled to liquidated damages that pay off the amount of the outstanding public financing. Article 5 does not allow for the sale or transfer of the team without authority approval unless the transferee accepts all obligations of the agreement, the team's responsibilities under other agreements, and Major League Baseball approves. A few changes have occurred since the October 17th board meeting, the last time this document was presented in public. Stadco has been added to the agreement as an additional party. The team was already a party, and to accommodate this, adjustments were made to the recitals into Section 2.3. In Article 4, prior versions of this document stated that liquidated damages included paying off outstanding county bonds and state refundable transferable tax credits, those being required by Senate Bill 1. At the county's request, the team has agreed to add the $25 million county development credit to the liquidated damages amortized over 25 years. The team also agreed in Article 4 to pay for any unfavorable tax outcomes on the county's tax-exempt bonds if such determinations are caused by the team's failure to pay liquidated damages in a timely manner. And there were other minor administrative changes, including aligning the agreement with the other agreements. Mr. Chair, Agenda Item 7 is an action item. Staff recommends approval and is available for questions.
Any questions for Mr. Finger? Hey, I would entertain a motion that the board approves the Clark County Stadium Authority's non-relocation agreement with Athletics Stadco LLC and Athletics Investment Group LLC.
Mr. Chair, I will make that motion. And I would just also note that, as everyone stated, this was a very complex negotiation. It wasn't like Legion where we owned the land, so it was very easy. There are many parties in this negotiation. I've sat through several sessions of negotiations, as I know every member of this board have, and I'm very comfortable first in thanking the A's for their diligence, thanking staff for all the different levels of negotiations that we pursued, and I very confidently move for approval.
Tommy White, second.
Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
And that passes. Agenda item 8.
I'm glad you said agenda item 8 because my notes said agenda item 9. Mr. Chair, agenda item 8 requests the board's approval of the baseball stadium lease. And today we bring the lease to the board for the fifth time, and this document has been in the public domain for over a year now. Key provisions of the lease include Section 2 prescribes the term and extension options. The initial lease term is 30 years with 5 exercisable options by Stadco. This includes 4 15-year terms and 1 9-year term for a potential lease period of 99 years. Stadco generally has to be complying with the lease to extend. To exercise an extension option, Stadco must have no uncured events of default that are continuing. Section 2.3 provides for a period of notification if Stadco intends to extend the lease, a required notification from the authority as to whether the conditions for lease extension are satisfied, and an opportunity for Stadco to remedy if they are not. Article 6 provides for allowed uses of the stadium, which is a wide range of sporting, entertainment, civic, conference, and other commercial uses. Stadco has exclusive rights to the facility. As provided in the already board-approved community benefits agreement, Stadco will provide a suite and parking passes for use by charitable, community, or economic development organizations. Exhibit F prevents specific prohibited uses of the stadium, such as sexually oriented businesses or gaming or gambling activities. The stadium must be the home field for a professional baseball team to extend and keep the lease. As I just described, the non-relocation agreement requires the team to play home games at the stadium for 30 years and provides for certain allowed exceptions. Section 14.8 of the lease contains similar covenants for years 31 through 99 for any optional lease extension periods. This section provides for the renegotiation of these neutral site games after 30 years based on other contemporary agreements. Section 14.8 allows the same exceptions as the non-relocation agreement, where untenantability prevents the team from playing in the stadium. In the lease, Stadco covenants to maximize the stadium's use for all of the previously described purposes, including non-baseball purposes. In Section 7.4, Stadco must make a good faith effort and undertake commercially reasonable best practices to maximize the stadium's utility and report such utilization to the board. Article 4 provides that Stadco is entitled to all of the revenues from the stadium with no rent payable to the authority. They are in turn responsible for paying all operating expenses and losses of the stadium. Section 7.6 requires Stadco to meet a facility standard to keep the stadium in at least equal condition to other comparable Major League Baseball facilities. Those are defined as premier first-class baseball stadiums incorporating at the time of initial construction or material renovation technological innovations, environmental sustainability considerations, and other best practices in design, construction, and operation. There are considerations for comparable size and age adjusted to reflect any material renovations of the stadium. Stadco is responsible for all of the capital repairs and improvements of the stadium. Stadco is required to get board approval for capital projects. After 3 calendar years, Stadco must provide a rolling 5-year forecast of projected capital repairs and improvements. That was agenda item one today in a football context. There is a revenue waterfall for the baseball stadium project, as there is for the football stadium project. I presented this waterfall to the board in October. After certain waterfall priority payments, including bond payments and authority operating costs, a stadium authority capital fund reserve is funded up to $5 million a year and annually, initially escalated annually by CPI. Separately, Stadco is required to fund a capital reserve of $2.5 million annually, also escalated by CPI, to pay for capital repairs and improvements. Those amounts are independent of waterfall availability. Article 8 states the Stadco may make material changes and alterations to the stadium, but those must be approved by the board regardless of funding source. And if the board denies any such work, the authority cannot subsequently declare an event of default if such work proposed by Stadco would have prevented the default. Stadco has to provide parking. They have to meet this county's parking standard. Has to be available for baseball and non-baseball events. They can do this directly. They can do it by leasing other facilities. They can do it through affiliates. The lease contains provisions for the continuity of parking for the authority use in the event of a lease default by Stadco. Stadco is allowed to name the stadium or any portion of the stadium and to receive naming right revenue. The board must approve the name if it violates the law, uses the name of any governmental entity other than Clark County or Las Vegas, or otherwise would reasonably cause embarrassment or disparagement. In Article 5, Statco must carry normal commercial insurances to protect for loss or damage to the building or occurrences inside of the building. We have a reasonable right of access for inspection or of emergency. Stadco, as provided in the law, can purchase the stadium at the end of the initial 30-year lease term or any lease extension period at appraised value. If the land reconveys to GLPI or its successor under the deed terms that Chair just referred to, and I'll talk to about in some detail here in a little bit, if that happens in the first 30 years, Stadco must pay the authorities interest in the appraised value of the land, less the cost of demolition, if they pay for demolition. There's an annual audit required, and we're required to pay for half of it. And generally, the lease contains other customary default and remedy provisions consistent with the terms and leases of comparable Major League Baseball facilities. Generally, disagreements under the lease are subject to alternative dispute resolution. There are a few changes since you saw it last on October 31st. One of them relates to the tax treatment of Stadco Stadium contribution. It moved from Section 4.2 to Section 19.25. In October, we told the board that we'd modify the parking section to allow for the potential of a Stadco affiliate providing parking, and we have done so in 715. Generally, Stadco affiliate can provide parking. It has to meet all of those same requirements of the county under the development agreement. Stadco can charge parking, can charge customers fair market parking rates, must keep the parking consistent with the facility standard, and can't charge Stadco any cost for the parking in the event of a lease default. So what I just described there is if we take over parking, if somehow there's a lease default. As we've continued to develop the deed, we updated the document to explain the reconveyance process, including that payment for land. Noteworthy changes in that section include the process for estimating and settling of the actual demolition cost if paid by Stadco. And those, again, are a reduction to the payment of the appraised value of the authority's interest in the land. And as communicated by the chair at the last meeting, we added a condition in the untenantability definition, allows the team to temporarily play outside of the stadium for a material renovation that can't otherwise be reasonably completed during the off-season, and the board would have to approve that. Other administrative changes that aren't significant enough to bring to the board's attention. And Mr. Chair, agenda item eight, it is an action item, and staff recommends approval and is available for any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Finger? If there are none, I would entertain a motion to approve the lease agreement between Clark County Stadium Authority and the Athletic Stadco LLC.
Jones Blackhurst, I move to approve the lease agreement.
Mm-hmm. We have a second.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
Tommy White, second.
You got beat on that one, Tommy. Okay, that passes. Agenda item nine.
Mr. Chair, we're round and second. And if you wouldn't
been waiting
mind
for a month to say that, haven't you?
I actually just thought of it when you made your bad pun a few minutes ago. So if you'll allow me, I'll present agenda items 9 and 10 together and then ask you to vote on them separately. They're related to each other. I'll start by acknowledging a point Mr. Koo made at the beginning of the meeting, and he's earned perhaps an honorary seat up here, not a real one. You mentioned belt and suspenders earlier, Steve, and there's a number of things that we do that have additional protections and additional steps. And before we ever got to the point of issuing bonds, we are going to come back to this board and have you reach a number of Section 34 findings. And 34 has a whole bunch of findings. But Mr. Koo makes a point that is fair, and that is in the Section 34 article, or not in, I'm sorry, in the development agreement in Article 4 sub I. There's a statement made that the authority has reviewed and approved all of the documents necessary to make all approvals and findings as required by subsection 1 of section 22 of the Act, and that's accurate. And subsection 1 of section 34 of the Act, while there are additional steps that would have done, you know, perform the belt and suspenders function in the form of coming back here to get those approvals, We do propose deleting all of the words that I just read after 22, i.e. the reference to the 34 findings. And so I read that into the record before your action. Mr. Chair, the development agreement is the last of four key agreements that must be approved. The deed form is attached to the development agreement as Exhibit E. Start with the development agreement. It was originally introduced in July. It's the third time it's been before the board. It provides the financing and development framework for the stadium. It protects public money by requiring private money to be spent ahead of this public money. The key elements of this agreement are that it requires the Major League Baseball stadium to be consistent with first-class premier facilities currently in operation or approved for construction by Major League Baseball. It must be in Clark County. It must be at the southeast corner of the Boulevard and Tropicana Avenue. And it must have an attendance capacity of approximately 30,000 attendees. The term begins if it's signed today, and it ends on the later of the project construction completion day or the completion of public financing, which is necessarily the last transferable tax credit certificate date. It prescribes the sources of financing to pay for the stadium, and I'll repeat some of the things you said earlier, Mr. Chair. It sets the maximum public contribution, which was already set in the law. It caps the public contributions at $380 million. I mentioned earlier about the protection of the public spend. It requires the first $100 million of the project to be paid by the team. It requires the last $50 million of the project to be paid by the public. All those amounts in between are paid based on proportionate public and private contributions to the project. The team bears all cost overruns unless they're due to changes required by us that aren't otherwise required by building code. The public financing structure under SB1, and I'll compare this to the football stadium, where generally all the public financing was provided at the initial or the very early phase of the project. This public financing structure, particularly the delayed transferable tax credits, which are in five different tranches, no more than one a year, and aren't available until, in the first instance, the bonds are issued, and then at percentages of construction completion for the second and third tranche, at completion of construction for the fourth tranche, and a year after completion for the last tranche. And that delayed transferable tax credit structure means that Stadco will have to pay proportionally ahead of its final pro rata share of the stadium cost. Their monies will always be spent faster than the final setup and ratio of public versus private money. The land must be dedicated to the authority before the issuance of bonds. The agreement provides for an independent construction monitor to provide monthly certified reports to the authority, to Stadco, to any lenders. And this covers the progress of the work, budget reconciliations, permits, and all matters required under the law. It also provides for a separate authority construction representative to review the stadium's design and construction, and that is paid for through the project budget. This board has previously approved Grand Canyon Development Partners as this representative. The agreement requires the authority's approval of the project cash budget, which is included as an exhibit. Sandy spoke to it earlier. The authority must also approve key contract elements. The authority is entitled to evidence of the ability to change, to pay for construction change orders that could cause the project to go over budget in the future. The agreement requires the construction contract to provide for statutory retainages, customary workmanship warranties, a fixed price or guaranteed maximum price, statutory payment and performance bonds, and other key elements. The developer partner must provide periodic progress reports to this board on the project's development and construction status. We have audit rights to determine compliance with the agreement at our cost. Contains provisions regarding prevailing wage and small local business participation in compliance with both SB1 and the Community Benefits Agreement, and those must be included in the construction contracts. Stadco's compliance with these requirements must be reported to the board. The developer partner must provide the adjacent infrastructure required by the county through that separate development agreement. Requires the developer partner to consider using multimodal facilities that use alternative modes of transportation. And it contains customary defaults and remedy provisions generally in sync with the other documents. This document is substantially similar to the last time it was in public at October 17th, a couple of small things. We added language to connect it to the final deed form. We added language to integrate the team's financing plan that was presented earlier today. We've detailed the key members of the project team, and by way of approving this development agreement, the board will approve the core project development team, specifically HNTB Nevada as the architect of record, the Mortenson McCarthy joint venture as the design builder, and CAA Icon as the developer's or owner's representative. The project cash budget, that $1.75 billion budget, has been added as Exhibit D and is formally approved if this agreement is approved. And we've made additional clarifying and administrative changes. I'm going to pause and ask if there's any questions on the development agreement before I get into the deed, which is the substantial attachment to the development agreement.
Questions for Mr. Finger on the development agreement? Okay, thanks.
Staff introduced the deed for the first time at the board meeting on October the 31st. And because I presented the details so recently, I'll try to just stay on the few high-level terms of the deed. The high-level terms are that the land is dedicated conditionally. Those conditions can be met in either of two ways, or must be met in either of two ways. The first is that a Major League Baseball team must use the stadium as its home stadium. This is called the team trigger. The second is an attendance trigger. Regardless of the presence of a baseball team, as long as there are 150,000 attendees in the facility per year, the stadium's productive use complies with the deed. There's a two-year grace period after the occurrence of the team trigger before the attendance trigger is measured. Together, the team trigger must be ongoing and the attendance trigger must occur for the reconveyance requirements of the deed to spring. If the two triggers have occurred and the authority is still the landowner, the authority must offer reconveyance to the owner of the benefited parcel. And now I'm going to refer forward to agenda item 10, which I'll ask you to vote on after you vote on 9. And council, thank you. As part of the deed, and again, the subject of agenda item 10, the board is asked to make a determination that in the event of both triggers occurring, that maintenance of the stadium is unnecessarily burdensome to the authority owner, and the reconveyance of the stadium parcel would be in the best interest of the authority owner and its residents or constituents, and the authority owner will issue a reconveyance offer to the owner of the benefited parcel. So, Mr. Chair, this determination is proposed to meet the statutory framework that the very talented attorneys to my right came up with, and it enables the enable this deconstruct. And because if the team has left and the authority is either unable or not interested in meeting what is really functionally a very low threshold to put 150,000 butts in seats in a 30,000-seat arena on the Las Vegas Strip, then I think it's fair to say that the cost and effort of the ownership will indeed be burdensome.
But those butts are going to be cooled.
Yeah.
And on to third.
To get the stadium parcel back, the owner of the benefited parcel must. So if we have to give the land back, the party we give it back to has to commence demolition with 18 months and diligently pursue completion. They can't use the facility during that period of time. And if they don't want to do that, they have to instead buy the stadium from us at a price value. The deed prescribes who will be responsible for the demolition if it occurs and the payment of any transfer taxes, and it is never the stadium authority. See all these pages of notes I'm skipping for you? We've made a few changes to the deed since its first presentation. This comes back to what you were talking about a few minutes ago. We revised the team trigger. The team trigger generally means that Major League Baseball considers the stadium the team's home stadium and that at least 90% of the games are played in the stadium each regular season, unless a non-discriminatory MLB directive allows otherwise. This does not override or compromise our non-relocation terms, which are tighter, again, requiring no more than 7 games out of the stadium every 2 years and no more than 4 in any given year. It does create an outer limit for the lease negotiation that I mentioned earlier for years 31 through 99. We revise the attendance trigger grace period after a team trigger occurs. The attendance trigger is measured any 12-month period beginning on the second anniversary of the team trigger, or in any full calendar year starting after the same second anniversary. Point is, if there's a team trigger, we got a couple of years before we actually have to meet the attendance trigger, the 150,000 trigger. We've clarified that the authority owner and that's us or a subsequent governmental owner, can't create its own force majeure event to create a permitted closure and avoid an attendance trigger. Again, complementary language to a structure that we have, there's the introduction of a concept of material renovation. It's a renovation that is $250 million or more, that number adjusted each year forward for CPI, which permits an extended closure for renovation. This board will always have approval rights through the lease of any project that would lead to a closure. We fleshed out the permitted closure definition. Those are the allowed conditions that don't count against the triggers. Generally, condemnations, applications of law on that list that I read to you earlier, and the most meaningful being the material renovation allowance we just described. If it comes to pass that we enter into a long-term lease, if we sell or enter into a long-term lease, the STADCO is absolved of their demolition responsibility and it passes on to that transferee. And so what we did is we created some structure in there to make it clear that we might not lease if we operate it, but we might instead hire people to help us run the facility as operators. And we've carved out words to make it clear that that wouldn't be considered a lease if we did it in that specified context. Otherwise, we've added definitions to support the document and properly interact with the other core stadium agreements. We've cleaned up reporting and other timelines, external document cross-references, clarified demolition and transfer tax obligation scenarios and enforcement rights. And Mr. Chair, agenda items 9 and 10 are both action items. Staff recommends their approval.
Thank you, Mr. Finger. Questions for Ed? Okay. And I would entertain a motion for the Stadium Authority to approve the development agreement between Clark County Stadium Authority and Athletic STADCO LLC, which is inclusive of the form of dedication deed and grant of reversionary and reconveyance rights between the authority, DEVCO, and Tropicana Land LLC.
Tommy White moves to approve.
Jones Blocker is second.
A motion and a second. Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
Genoa, yes.
And that passes. Agenda item 10, I would entertain a motion that the board approve adopting resolution 2024-07 regarding the circumstances that will require the reconveyance of Major League Baseball Stadium project land after dedication of the land to the Stadium Authority.
Jones Blackhurst, move to approve.
Tommy White, second.
Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
And that passes. Agenda item 11.
Mr. Chair, can we revert back to agenda item number 9, please? Just to note on the record that that approval includes the proposed amendment Mr. Finger mentioned.
Do we need to take action on that?
Yes, please.
Okay. So we would ask that those who made the motion and the second revise the motion to include the edit, and then we will revote.
I would make the motion to revise the amendment as stated.
And I would second that, Tommy White.
Thank you. Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
And the coup amendment passes. Thank you. Agenda item 11.
Mr. Chair, with your permission, I will present agenda items 11 and 12 together. Board members, the formative documents for both the baseball stadium and the football stadium include provisions that require administrative action and/or approvals by the stadium authority. Examples of such actions are a mutual agreement with the stadium events company on the certified public accountant to perform the annual audit of STADCO, which Mr. Finger brought as agenda item 2 today, and joint approval with STADCO of appropriate insurance coverages or adjustments for the stadiums. The documents also require payment of certain expenditures, such as half of the payment of the annual STADCO audit as required by SB1. Additionally, the Stadium Authority will need to execute certain easements and rights of entry, as well as associated documents to permit governmental entities and utilities to access the stadium parcel. Staff is requesting that the board delegate the authority to make such administrative decisions, execute any related documents, issue the associated payments, and take other actions that are necessary to perform the Stadium Authority's requirements under or otherwise effectuate the formative documents to the chair. Staff does not include as the quote-unquote administrative decision-making actions on matters such as approval of proposed capital budgets by the respective stadium events companies, approval of the Stadium Authority's annual budget, or similar actions. Those items will continue to be presented to the board for its full consideration and action. Mr. Chair, this is an action item, and if the board doesn't have any questions, staff recommends approval in two separate votes.
Any questions for Ms. Bateman? Okay, I will entertain a motion for the delegation of authority as described in agenda item 11.
Jones Blackhurst, move to approve.
Tommy White, second.
Right, motion and a second. Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
That passes, and I will also entertain a motion for the delegation of authority as described in agenda item 12.
Jones Blackhurst, move to approve.
Tommy White, second.
For motion and second, please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
And that passes. Thank you. Agenda item 13.
Mr. Chair, with the actions taken today, the board has met all of the requirements necessary at this point to notify the Board of County Commissioners so that they can begin the process of creating the Sports and Entertainment Improvement District to assist in the financing of the MLB Stadium project. It is an action item. Staff recommends approving the notification of the Clark County Board of County Commissioners that all requirements have been met.
Jones Blackhurst, move to approve the notification of the Clark County Board of Commissioners.
Tommy White, second.
We have a motion and a second. Please cast your votes.
Lawrence Epstein, yes.
And that passes. Agenda item. Agenda item 14. Sure.
Board members, the Community Benefits Agreement, or CBA, was approved by the board earlier this year as to form and may now be executed shortly after this meeting with your selection of Athletic Stadco as the joint stadium events company and developer partner. In compliance with the requirements in SB 1, the CBA includes commitments from Stadco in and towards the community. They include financial commitments to the community in cash and or in-kind services, such as youth baseball support, veterans programs, improvements to community ball fields, and scholarships and internships for career development. Additionally, commitments to ensure participation by the community in the economic opportunities available in connection with the stadium project. Those include construction and stadium operations workforce diversity, livable wages, and community engagement. The term of the CBA kicks off when the county issues bonds for the stadium, and that term lasts until the lease agreement for the baseball stadium expires or otherwise terminates. SB 1 requires the establishment of a baseball stadium community oversight committee, which will implement and administer the CBA. The committee will have 7 members, including 2 members appointed by this body, one of such appointees to serve as the committee's chair, 1 member appointed each by the governor, the Senate Majority Leader, and the Speaker of the Assembly, and 2 members appointed by the Clark County Commission. Restrictions on eligibility to serve as a committee member include prohibitions on elected officials, employees of the team or affiliates, employees of any businesses working for the team or the stadium project, or labor representatives representing employees or seeking to represent employees of the project. Based on the required commitments related to construction of the stadium, staff believes that the committee should be seated prior to construction commencing on the project. Staff will be issuing notices to the appointing bodies and officials shortly so that they may initiate their respective appointment processes. In addition to the establishment of the committee, SB 1 also requires the board to appoint a community benefits director to monitor compliance with the CBA and to advise the committee. Restrictions on the eligibility for the director include any employees of the team or its affiliates, employees of any businesses working for the team or the project. Additionally, the director must have been a resident of Clark County for at least 5 years prior to the appointment date. Staff does not believe the director position is a full-time one. Rather, it will recommend in a future meeting a consultant arrangement that it will present for the board's approval. Staff will solicit interest for the committee and director appointments by posting a notice on the Stadium Authority website. Staff will also consult with each of the board members individually to gauge interest in serving on the committee and to receive your recommendations, if any, for the appointments. Staff will compile potential appointments for the board's consideration during the February board meeting. This is an information-only item, Mr. Chair, but I'm happy to answer any questions the board members may have.
Questions for Ms. Bateman?
Did we have a similar committee overseeing Allegiant, or was it just Jeff?
We do, yes. Okay, thank you. Before we move to public comment, I just want to make a few additional comments. It's a really significant day for Las Vegas and for Nevada, and there'll be more of them. We're going to have a groundbreaking, and we're going to have a topping off party, and we're going to have opening day, and we're going to have many years of Major League Baseball and some pretty fantastic events at a new ballpark on an iconic corner in Las Vegas. But today's a real milestone, and I think we should recognize that and celebrate that, and maybe clap a little about it too, huh? Yeah. I want to thank the governor and the legislature, as Sandy did. There was a lot that led up to a legislative session 16 months ago in order to allow this day to even attempt to happen. And, you know, we described that during a legislative session, and the law passing is giving us an opportunity to make today take place. And the governor and legislative leadership and all the legislators had the foresight to give us that opportunity, and it allowed us to make this happen today. I want to thank the county commissioners and their staff for what they have done, the role that they have played so far. And it's just going to get more for them moving forward. And I want to thank them so not only for what they've done, but what they will do over the next number of years in order to facilitate this stadium being built. I want to thank Bally's and GLPI for dedicating 9 acres of an iconic corner in Las Vegas for this project, for seeing the vision of what this can mean to them and to Las Vegas, and to being really great partners through this process. That it's a difficult thing to negotiate agreements between four different parties whose interests are mostly aligned, but every now and then we can anticipate where they might not be, and being able to work through that in a timely fashion was critical to making this project happen, and we know that it will inure to their benefit moving forward. I want to thank Sandy and the A's team and everybody that was involved from your side of this conversation. It's been a lot of work for a long period of time, and we really appreciate that. I want to thank Mark and Ryan and Angela and everybody on your teams for all the work that you have done. We've been a pretty good team over the past decade or so. So Ed said he went back and looked at some film from 6-8 years ago, and we both looked, or all looked younger maybe, but maybe not Angela, but Mark and I. But want to thank you for all that you've done for making this happen.
Thank you.
I want to thank Caroline. We kind of dumped an awful lot of work on you over the past 16 months or so, and without all you've done, this would not have happened. And I've had the real good fortune to work with Jeremy Aguero and Ed Finger on each of these stadium projects. And, you know, this project is Jeremy hadn't been in the room for this one, but he's been a part of this. It certainly was during the legislative session. It would not have happened without him. And certainly would not have happened without Ed either. So I appreciate all that you have done to add this to your workload and to do it in such a great way. The feedback that we've gotten from everybody involved is your leadership on this has made it happen, and I appreciate it. And I want to thank John Fisher and the Fisher family. Without their dedication, this has been a three-year process or three-and-a-half-year process in Nevada, but it's been an awful lot longer than that for the Fisher family. And John's commitment to making it work here in Las Vegas is the reason that this happened. We look forward to welcoming the A's to Las Vegas, welcoming Major League Baseball to Las Vegas, welcoming a premier world-class ballpark to this city and everything that means. And I appreciate everybody that made it happen. We're going to open it for public comment here in just a second. After that, I'm going to ask Sandy to come up and join me. I'm going to ask Mr. Weekly to stand up, the board to stand up behind us. We will sign these documents. I want to ask Ed and Caroline to join as well. Catherine, if you'd like to join us, we'd love to have you as well. We'll sign these documents and get moving on this project. So with that, I will open the floor for public comment. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes and identify yourself when you come up. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Chris Daly, Nevada State Education Association and Schools Over Stadiums. Over the course of my career, I've served on many boards, commissions, and committees. And for me, the magic of them were that, in a public forum, you can get different backgrounds, different perspectives. You can decentralize decision making. You can represent segments of communities that otherwise aren't represented in the back room. So through the chair to the committee members, you should do better. Steve Hill obviously is a pretty masterful operative. He has a staff, he's got this building. And I think we know who he works for. But to the rest of you, there are communities that need representation. And if this is the marquee day that Chair Hill says it is, as you sign the documents and take the photographs, perhaps a question, some discussion, perhaps just amplifying some concerns of the public, a majority of whom in Las Vegas oppose the use of public money for this stadium. And you have 13 members, not all here today, but you have 13 members and not a single question. The public deserves better. Thank you.
Welcome. Good afternoon. Brian Scroggins. I'm the CEO of the Emergency Management Foundation, which I founded to support first responders in the community here in Las Vegas. I just wanted to take a moment. I'm a chaplain now with Metro and Las Vegas Fire and Rescue, and I've volunteered with Clark County Fire for about 10 years for both great community events and tragic things that have happened. I just wanted to take a moment to thank Allegiant Stadium staff, especially David Avila, who recently allowed me to bring in a group of 20 chaplains, who many of whom responded to the 1 October as I was overseeing spiritual emotional care during that response. They gave us a great emergency management tour of the stadium. These would be chaplains who would respond in case there is an emergency in the valley. And I just wanted to take the time to thank Allegiant staff for doing that for us and being so accommodating. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hill, I know you thanked a whole lot of people, and I appreciate that because they all deserved that recognition. You know, I want to thank, if you don't mind, I want to thank Ed Finger and Caroline Bateman. First of all, I have briefings, and I want to thank you all because I get an opportunity to ask everything. It's a lot I didn't understand and I didn't know. I saw a lot of things in the media. Chris Mathis, who's here from 8 News Now, you know, he reached out to me and asked me questions, and I could call you all and ask that. And so in my briefing, because I'm very, very sensitive about how the public feels about certain things, and I share that with you both, thank you for that. I just wanted that to be known for the record that we all receive briefings. And so with due respect to time, you know, we want to be considerate of the public's time. You know, we ask our questions when we get an opportunity to meet with you all, and if we want to sit here and expound on that and add an additional hour, we can do that. And so I want to put that on the record. But Sandy, I wanted to also ask you respectfully as well. I can't help myself going back to my commission days. Would you please meet with the Catholic diocese, please, and just talk with them and bring them some comfort or just understanding? Because here in Southern Nevada, we believe in partnerships, and that's why we're where we are today. We believe in partnerships, and so if you do that for me, that give me some great comfort. Michael Crome and Chris, thank you for the presentation today. I appreciate your transparency as well. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to maybe ask in our 2025 meeting that when STADCO comes back before us, if they could maybe talk to us about some other improvements in reference to, like, let me just say, men's restroom over at Allegiant Stadium. I was there at that amazing UNR game, and you know, we were all there for the Boise game, and we're praying for our Rebels to get them this time. But if we could talk about what we're going to do about the restrooms there, because I actually had to stand back and look, and I thought, there's a lot of room for some improvement here. We need some more stalls. We need some ingress and egress space. You know, guys move around, and it's just so. I mean, it's a subject everybody don't talk about, but it's crazy when you've been in public office and you start seeing things a little different. If y'all can look into that for me, and I'd love for the ladies to come and talk about their experience on their side.
Actually,
as well.
It's exceptional.
Yeah.
We're sorry you guys have a problem.
Yeah, we have a problem. We have a problem on our side, and so we want to make sure that as the Rebels grow and get better, and as the Rebels grow and get better, we love our Coach Odom. We just want to have when we have those big events there that we're comfortable there, and it's a safe space for us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, because I'm a relatively new member of the Authority Board, I think I came in just in time for some of the really hard work. But I appreciate your leadership, Mr. Weekly, and providing an opportunity to have us direct our thank you to you. The briefings are incredibly helpful. And I have been grateful to you for your willingness to respond to difficult questions. And also the amount of work that's gone in from a collaborative standpoint with all of the parties that are involved. I've asked you questions around a number of areas. You know where my interests are with respect to community benefits, sustainability, any number of issues that perhaps have not been a part of our conversations here, but I do want to extend my thanks to you and the team. It really has been an extraordinary few months, and I agree this is a very important day as we advance in making Las Vegas the incredible place that it is.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much for that.
Anybody else? Okay, we are adjourned. I'm going to invite the folks I talked about up.